When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to F1 Explains, the official Formula One podcast that unpicks, unpacks, explains, and demystifies the wonderful world of Formula One. My name is Christian Hugill. Whether you've been into Formula One for 5 minutes, 5 months, 5 years, 5 decades even, there is something in this podcast for you. And this week is something we've never done before. I'm really looking forward to it. Welcome to one of our quickfire specials. Now, I know what you're thinking if you've been with us for a while. You've done loads of quickfire specials. These are the episodes where we just throw lots of little bits of questions at somebody who knows something about Formula One in the hope they'll explain stuff to us, rather than unpack one particular topic over the course of an episode. Like we did last week, by the way, with our episode on data, which went down very well. Loads of you got in touch with me on Instagram and TikTok to say you enjoyed that, so thank you very much. This week, it's a little bit different. Loads of different topics, but all put to one team. And we've never done this before. We dug into the inbox, F1explains@F1.com, and we got all the questions suitable for Haas that had been sent in to Haas and sent in to their drivers. And because we decided to do it with Haas, we thought, why not? We're going to record it at the US Grand Prix. They are America's Formula One team. It seemed like the perfect place to do it. Now, what we've decided to do is, given its quickfire, do short, sharp bursts with loads of different people across the team. So coming up in this episode, you'll hear from the drivers. They're fairly important, aren't they? Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman. We'll talk to them. We will also talk to Courtney Crone, who is racing in her first full season in F1 Academy for the ART Grand Prix team, supported by Haas. She is Haas's F1 Academy representative. We're also hearing from Laura Muller, who is in her first season as Esteban Ocon's race engineer. But we are starting with Io Komatsu. So these are your questions for the team principal of Haas. And we thought we'd do something a little bit different. We wanted to end each chat with a question for the next person coming up. And by the way, don't listen to this and think, oh, well, they staged this. They gave them the questions. We really didn't. We gave, in this case, Io Komatsu the opportunity and said, look, if you want to ask Laura something, what would it be? And we wanted to see what they've come up with. So this is part one of F1 Explains Ask Haas with Laura Muller in just a second. But first, Io Komatsu. Hello, sir. What's your name? Where do you come from? What's your role here?
Hi, I'm Io Komatsu. I'm a team principal at the MoneyGram Haas F1 team.
I thought I'd seen you around, Io. I thought you looked familiar at this team. You sort of run it, don't you?
Sort of. Kind of. Yeah.
And our listeners have been sending in questions for you about running this Formula One team.
Okay.
We'll put those to you. The first is from Andrew. And Andrew says, "Hi, Io. Can you explain the dynamic between the constructors and the teams that buy their engines? So Haas use Ferrari engines, so how does that relationship work? I think I heard once that Haas is unique because it buys the most amount of parts allowed under the regulations. Is that true?"
Yeah, it is true. You know, and we started this brand new team, you know, from scratch 10 years ago. And if you look at history, it's very, very difficult for a brand new team to survive for more than two seasons, be competitive. So our model was to buy as many components as possible from existing competitive people. And then that would help us, you know, focus on the area that we should focus on, which is aerodynamics. So that's how we set up. So engine, gearbox, front and rear suspensions, some hydraulics, electronics, that's as many parts as possible you can buy from Ferrari, we buy from Ferrari. And that's the foundation. So Ferrari is an amazing partner from day one. And yes, over the 10 years, our dynamic has been changing, but in a good way. Because once you get off the ground, and then you really got to start them trying to understand a bit more by yourself. But Ferrari just given us that amazing foundation head start.
And talking about the engine side of things with Ferrari, Io, I think this really interests a lot of people who are newer to Formula One. Because on the one hand, Ferrari want to beat Haas. Haas want to beat Ferrari. That's how this paddock works. But you have this relationship where you buy the engine and you have to work together. So how does Ferrari selling Haas an engine benefit them? And how does it benefit you?
Well, it's not just an engine, but, you know, like I said, we use Ferrari's suspensions as well. But engine by regulation has to be the same spec. Even how you run the engine, we call it engine board in a control system. That has to be the same across our Ferrari customer teams, if you like. So, and the more competitive you are, we can give them a better reference, right? Better data set. So it's good that, you know, as a customer team to be competitive, and then we push each other.
Lovely. Andrew, thank you for your question. Keith is in North Carolina. We've got some American fans for America's Formula One team. We don't just throw this together, Io. We try. Keith is from North Carolina. Keith says, Cadillac are joining as the second American team in Formula One in 2026. Am I allowed to mention Cadillac here? Is that okay?
I don't know. You just did. Okay, so fine. I don't think I've got a choice anymore.
Well, no, it's a good point. Keith says, what impact does that have on Haas, if at all?
No, I think if you look at it from a global Formula One community, I think it's really a good thing. And having 11 teams rather than 10 teams, 22 cars on the grid, that's exciting. And I think it just adds another dimension. You know, it's good. So far, we've been the only American team, which has been great. But next year, Cadillac's coming, but very much coming as a corporate, you know, American corporate team. And if you look at who we are complete privateer. We're owned by one single owner called Mr. Gene Haas. So, and we are pure race team. We're not corporate. We are completely opposite of corporate. We are small, but we are very agile, dynamic, really, really just everyone's focused on being competitive on a racetrack. So I think in that sense, it's very good contrast. And then we clear differentiation of who we are as an American race team versus an American corporate.
I think it's nice, though, that, of course, we've spoken already about the competitiveness. Everybody in this paddock wants to beat each other, but there is a sense of camaraderie. You're on the
Absolutely.
Road together. It's a nice thing.
Well, the thing is, like, you know, now, you know, Formula One's so popular, but that's because of the competition. You know, if you only got one team, obviously there's no racing. So it's really amazing that we've got 10 teams now with very different outlook, very different, let's say, setup. You know, the branding that are competing against each other, and one track certain people is more competitive than the other. So it's very much this, let's say, camaraderie and the community.
Final one for you, Io, is from Rachel. She's in West Virginia. Rachel says, "Hi, Io, I really want to know more about the people who are back at the factory. How many are there and what jobs are they doing?"
Yeah, I mean, overall, we are under 350 people, and we are by far the smallest team. You know, bigger teams, they have like 900, 1,000 people just to put two cars on the track. And at the circuit, I think we have around 100 people. But again, the bigger teams, they have more people at the circuit because of a much bigger marketing team, etc. But yeah, so what are those people doing back at the factory? So they are the one actually designing the cars. They are the one producing the cars. So the people in the wind tunnel, aerodynamicist, developing the car, CFD, using the computer to find out what kind of air surface you want. then designer is the one actually baking the or designing the components. Then you got people buying it, manufacturing people, and also even for the people who's focused on the performance. You know, during race weekend, we have a direct link, real time, to back to UK, back to Italy, and then those engineers are looking at the data real time to just help us making decisions.
And Haas have bases in North Carolina, in Banbury in the UK, and there's also a team we mentioned earlier at Maranello at Ferrari's factory,
yes.
Isn't there? So it really is a global operation, Haas, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then Italy is the one actually making the cars. There's wind tunnels there, so all our aerodynamicist designers, the ones making the cars, are based in Italy. And in a very simplistic sense, UK is the user, you know, and then the communications, marketing, commercial, that base.
Ayo, you're our first guest. Throughout this episode of the podcast, we're going to have team members from Haas joining us.
Okay.
The next one is Laura Muller.
Yeah.
You'll be aware of her work. She's Esteban Ocon's race engineer.
Is she?
All
right. Yeah, is she good?
No, she's very good.
Oh, good.
Very,
good,
very
yeah,
good. I wonder, do you have a question that you would like us to put to Laura? I mean, you could just go and ask her yourself. I'm aware of this. But, you know, we're trying to make a fun thing for the podcast. What would you like us to put to Laura on your behalf?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what was the, let's say, what got her into motorsport. You know, so like when I was a kid, you know, I was riding motorbike. I was 14. I just bumped into F1. I loved it. But I'm interested to know, like, what was like her like, initial contact with the motorsport? What made her fell in love with motorsport and F1?
Excellent question. You ever fancy not running a team principal, you could definitely host a podcast with questioning
okay,
like that.
Okay. Excellent.
I mean, I wouldn't. I'd stick with your job if I were you.
Right, okay,
I think the perks are probably better. But
you don't want to swap then?
Oh, I'd be truly awful. I'm nowhere near intelligent enough. I could only apologise. No, you definitely stick with this. Just before you go, Ayo, we have loads and loads of listeners in America.
Okay.
We've been doing, on F1 Explains this year, loads of fun things with Haas. We spent the race with you guys embedded in Miami. We've done various Meet the Team episodes. We've been in the pit lane and in the garage with you guys, and our listeners have loved it. So on behalf of the F1 Explains community across the 2025 season, massive thanks to Haas. You guys have done such a brilliant job in helping us explain the sport to fans all over the world and in America, your home country too. So thank you, Ayo.
No, thank you very much. And we are proud to be the, you know, American team and the radio pure privateer race team. And we really like to you know, include people, be inclusive, and they're really trying to give insights to people and the fans. So yeah, anything we can do, we are delighted. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Ayo.
Thank you.
Laura Muller, welcome to F1 Explains. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
I should, to stick with the format, say, please tell us your name, even though I've just said it. I'm not very good at this. Tell us what your name is and what your job title is here at Haas.
So my name is Laura Muller and I'm race engineer of Esteban Ocon.
Now, the first question we've got for you has come from your boss, Ayo Komatsu. Ayo has asked, what got you into Formula One, into motorsport? What sparked your passion into all of this mad world we find ourselves sat in right now?
Okay, so when I was a child, you know, Michael Schumacher was winning everything. So obviously I was watching F1 when I was like 5 years old on a Sunday. So I've always liked motorsports. And then I kind of lost it for a bit. And then after school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was like, I still like F1. I didn't really become an F1 driver, like, you know, the astronaut dream of some other people. So I was like, oh, let's try and become an engineer then. So that's how I got there.
So it was the great Michael Schumacher that sort of sparked it.
Yes.
Excellent. Right, let's get on to these listener questions. The first one is from John in Glen Falls, New York. John says, hi, Laura. I often hear a race engineer come onto the radio to their driver after a pit stop and say something along the lines of, the first few laps are crucial for these tyres. Can you explain why? Really good question from John.
Because the first few laps are crucial for the tyres.
Laura, thank you. Hope that helps, John.
No, okay.
I love how much that made you laugh. Laura's just really made herself laugh.
Sorry, I love laughing about my own jokes. So basically, depending what tyre you're obviously putting on the car, you have to manage that tyre for a bit. Usually if it's a softer tyre, you have to manage it a bit more. So the first few laps, when the tyre is not fully up to temperature, you can do a lot of damage to it. which is why often we say three laps or something, go a bit gentle on it, and then you can fully push on it.
It's something that not all race series have, is the level of complexity of the tyre in this sport. It's something that you often see, like on the other side of the garage, Ollie will have had to get used to these tyres in a lot more of a complex way than, say, the tyres he was racing on in F2. I'm imagining tyres must be something you have to coach your drivers through quite a lot. Even somebody who's been around as long as Esteban Ocon, who's been around many a long year, he'd be quick to point out he's not been around that long. But it's still, even for experienced drivers, people that you know, you have to coach them through this stuff as an engineer, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, like, Esteban knows how to manage tyres, but still, like, you still have to, you know, throughout the race, tell him, oh, you need to do a bit more management in turn 7 or watch your traction, because, you know, they get carried away, they're racing. And sometimes, you know, you have to balance between, we really need to overtake that car in front of us, or we really need to make that tire last for another 30 laps. So you have to be, like, managing that kind of thought and also, like, leading your driver and what he needs to be doing.
Yeah, sure. The next question, Dylan. It's from California. Dylan asks, sometimes in radio messages, we hear a driver say something feels off in the car, and an engineer says something about fixing the issue, but this is all while the driver is on track. Is engineering so sophisticated in Formula One that the team can fix something without even touching the car?
Yeah, we have a telepathy.
I was going to say, is this magic? Are you secretly keeping under the radar that you are magic?
Yeah, no.
No. Oh, imagine if they said yes. What exclusive that'd be. Yeah.
So basically, stuff like this, if we can fix it while the car's running, it's usually either some sort of balance issue. But if the driver says something's off, it's often like the engine or the gearbox or something. And then we have Ferrari in the background who can see what's happening. And then they will give us some sort of code to, like, default a sensor or go to a safer mode of something. So that's the only thing we can fix while we're running. The driver still has to do it. So we're not allowed to do anything to the car while the driver's running. So the driver still has to do it himself. But
fine.
Obviously there's 1 million things you can do on the steering wheel, yep, which we can lead him on to do.
Yeah, sure. The next question is from Patrick and Erica, who are in South Carolina. Patrick and Erica say, when you talk on the radio, do you think about the possibility of your words ending up on the TV broadcast? It's a really good question, because obviously you and your fellow race engineers are really the only people who are talking to the drivers during a session, unless Toto gets excited and buzzes through to George, which we've seen before. But generally speaking,
it's James.
Yeah. Generally speaking, unless Mercedes are getting excited, you're the only people that speak to the drivers. Are you thinking about being put on the telly?
I will now, thank you.
Okay, pleasure.
No, I never really think about that. The only moment I think about it is if I swear, when I'm like, oh, f-, and then I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to do that.
But just like we can beep that out, they can beep it out anyway, so they look, yeah, after you in that sense.
Definitely.
I don't know if you just spotted, but we're sat at the top of Haas, that Haas's hospitality, where we're recording this at the US Grand Prix. As we came up the stairs there, Ollie Bearman took a picture of us on what looked like his own camera. Do we know what he's doing? Is it just vlogging? It's, yeah, apparently.
Oh, no, there's a bear vlog.
Oh, it's a bear? Is it? Well, we're going to be in a bear vlog. It's exciting, isn't it? Now, we are getting lots of different team members onto the podcast throughout the episode, and our next guest is the Haas F1 Academy driver, Courtney Crone. Laura, do you have a question you'd like us to ask Courtney?
Well, I'd definitely like to know if she's enjoyed being our F1 Academy driver, and also, like, what got her into motorsport?
Excellent question. Laura, this has been so fun to chat. This has been a lot of fun to chat. Thank you so much. And just before you go, I speak to so many Formula One fans, listeners to this podcast, to another podcast I do as well. I've had so many messages this year asking me to say to you, when I do get the opportunity to meet you, just how much it means to a lot of people to see a woman in a race engineer position. As we said earlier, it is a visible, vocal position in Formula One. You're the first to do it. So I just wanted to pass on behalf of a lot of our listeners, a thank you to you.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you.
You're
I do my best.
You do. That's all we can do, isn't it? Laura, I hope to speak to you again. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a lovely Sunday.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back to F1 Explained, a quickfire special where we ask Haas. Before the break, you heard from Laura Muller and Ayo Komatsu. Some early thoughts of reflection. Ayo Komatsu is the nicest man. He's been on the podcast a couple of times this season. We did a live show with him at the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. He is the loveliest man. He's very kind to chat to. Equally, he's just got that sort of relentless determination and focus. You can tell when he sort of switches into game mode, where it's like, we can be lovely, we can chat, and then bam, I want this, this, and this. I find him really interesting. Thank you to Ayo. And Laura Muller, who is loving her first season as a race engineer, loving working with Esteban. Earlier in the season, on this podcast, Esteban called her the hardest working person he's worked with in his career. So we knew she was really good. Who knew she was as funny as she is? Laura Muller is absolutely hilarious. Fantastic to talk to Laura. So, still to come, Ollie Bearman and Esteban Ocon answer your questions. And we spoke to them, by the way, just before they went off for the race, which is really cool. I'd never done that before. I'd never had a chat to a driver so close to a race start, so that's really cool. But first, we're going to hear from Courtney Crone. And before the break, of course, Laura Muller put her question to Courtney. So, let's get back to it. And as if by magic, joining us is our next guest. Please introduce yourself. What's your name? Where do you come from? And what's your role within Haas?
So my name is Courtney Crone. I am the F1 Academy driver for the MoneyGram Haas F1 team this season.
And Courtney, you were stood. You arrived to do this interview just as Laura was asking the question. So you know what you've just been asked. Fire away.
That's right. If I recall correctly, she asked me how I've enjoyed being a part of the Haas team. And yeah, I would say this year has been absolutely incredible. Just being able to not only have the opportunity on these weekends where I'm not actually racing, I'm able to come here and work with some of the partners, show them around the garage, speak to them. Also getting an inside look with the team, being able to, you know, sit in on debriefs, kind of do some of the things that the Formula One drivers get to do on a daily basis. It's really interesting for me to be able to experience that myself and kind of learn and be able to take that wherever my racing journey takes me.
Just before we get on to the second bit of Laura's question, is that mixed feelings as a racing driver? Are you in one way itching to be out there and on another way being like, oh, I quite enjoy having this opportunity? Is it a mixed bag?
It is, and I think specifically for me at this track, just because it is here in, you know, Austin, Texas, it is the home crowd, and I've been able to have the opportunity to drive around this track in multiple disciplines of cars, so I always enjoy my time on COTA, so I think it would be an amazing time to be able to have an F1 Academy event here in the future.
Yes, well, we've had one in the past, so I'm sure it will come. I'm sure it will return at some point. And the second part of Laura's question was, what got you into motorsport in the first place?
So I would say my dad is the one that got me into motorsports. He was obviously a big fan of motorsports, both two and four wheels. So growing up in Southern California, I had a diverse range of motorsports to really choose from and be able to watch. And so I got started in quarter midgets, and then from there got the opportunity to do some motorcycle racing and just really jump around in different forms, two and four wheels, as I was younger. And was able to narrow down on my dream and what I really wanted to accomplish in motorsports. And, you know, that's just competing at the highest level, whether it's open wheel or GT racing.
Nice. We should put some listener questions to you. This one is from Christina. She's from California. Christina says, I was wondering how young drivers learn to drive and if drivers on the grid have coaches that help them improve their driving skills. Every other sport like golf and football and soccer, even at the highest levels, seem to have skills coaches that help the athletes develop. Is there something similar for drivers? Do they grow up with them, talking to them through an earpiece, teaching them how to take a particular corner, or are they just on their own? Thank you. Good question.
That is a great question. Obviously, everyone's a little bit different on the types of coaches they have and you know, where they need the coaching, but it is very standard for not only, you know, amateur drivers or young drivers, but also pro drivers to have driving coaches, obviously the physical coaches as well, you know, just the physios, the mental preparation. Me specifically, I do have a driver coach, really a driver coach manager that is helping me along my journey, especially this year, getting back into the formula car. So yeah, there is definitely coaching at all levels of motorsports. And, you know, it's a very useful tool if you can create the right team around you.
Yeah, and we should mention as well that the Formula One drivers, they do have race engineers. They also have performance engineers as well who help them with that side of things a little bit. And on that topic of driver development, we mentioned you're racing with ART Grand Prix in F1 Academy. Of course, you're supported by Haas. You're their representative in F1 Academy. So what support does Haas give you to help with your driver development? You're obviously, as we've said here, with Haas at the US Grand Prix, where there isn't any F1 Academy racing this weekend. So you've touched upon it, but give us an idea of what you're doing while you're here, but also that wider support that Haas gives you when you're racing in F1 Academy this season.
Right. So what I'm doing basically on these weekends that I'm not racing, but attending the races as, you know, a Haas F1 Academy driver, basically I'm doing a lot of media obligations and just, you know, promoting the F1 Academy on behalf of the MoneyGram Haas F1 team and just kind of letting our partners know, you know, doing the fan zones, kind of what the F1 Academy is about, the mission and the goals. Outside of these weekends, when it's actually my race weekends, you know, obviously there's a big financial support from the MoneyGram Haas F1 team. So the financial support obviously is huge on the side to secure me the seat in the F1 Academy. And, you know, obviously, along with that, being able to, like I had mentioned earlier, sit in on the debriefs, kind of get to know the team, learn the partners, it is beneficial for me in the long run just to be able to, you know, take that information and, you know, carry it along in my career.
Sure. And let's talk a little bit about driving. Jack is from California. Jack says, how do drivers determine the most efficient or the fastest path through a track? How does one determine when to sacrifice a corner and speed going into that corner for the sake of the next one, for example? I guess what a lot of Jack's talking about here is what we'll call the racing line for a start.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of factors that go into that. On the first part, how do you determine, that kind of goes back into having a coach. So if you do have a driving coach or your engineer and there's previous data from the track, from the team, obviously you can go back, see what worked for them the best and especially their setup. And then also there's the second part where, you know, there's different driving styles and not one thing works for every driver. So generally there's one racing line, but if you get to a particular corner that there's multiple racing lines, you have to take the one that works best for not only your driving style, but the car that you're given. So, you know, you have to kind of specify if you're having understeer, you have to take the corner one way. If you're having oversteer, you have to take the corner another way. So it's very corner specific. I'd say generally most of the time there's only one way to get around a corner, but when you get to those multi-line corners, there's a lot of factors you have to put in to be able to, what is the fastest way around it for you.
Courtney, of course, you're American. You're representing America's Formula One team. Whereabouts in America are you from?
I'm from Southern California. I live specifically in La Quinta, California.
Hoping to visit California for the first time next year. It's on my bucket list, so you can give me some tips later.
I might be a little biased, but it's the best.
That's fine. I don't mind that at all. how does it feel being American, representing America's F1 team? Must be a nice thing.
It is amazing, especially getting to feel the energy here at Circuit of the Americas, getting to see a lot of Haas F1 gear.
You really feel the love for Haas here.
Yes, yeah. We do. I think this is kind of that core audience. We obviously have quite a few North America rounds these days, but this is really the Grand Prix that I feel brings the most energy to the Haas team. And obviously getting to have the special livery, the stars and stripes, it's just incredible to feel that kind of energy.
Haas are good at a special livery. Haas have done some great special liveries.
They really are.
What's the Japanese flower? Help me, someone. Blossom.
Thank you, cherry producer blossom.
Jamie. Cherry blossom. It just completely exited my head then. I'm not good on flowers. The cherry blossom livery was this year, wasn't it? Yeah, I really liked that. Yeah, they do a good special livery, has to. Courtney, before we let you go, our next guests, I suppose I should say, are Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman. You know those guys?
I've heard of them.
They heard of them. Nice chaps. Have you got a question for them?
Yeah, I do. I think my question would be, how do you take, when you're both put out on separate setups, trying to figure out which one is better, what kind of information are they giving when they're trying to correlate setup changes when they're different from one another?
Good question. We like that question. There's lots of these Haas people are very good at asking questions. Like, it makes me sort of worried for my job. Courtney, this has been a pleasure. Really, really enjoyed meeting you, talking to you, and of course, good luck for the rest of the F1 Academy season. We've got one race left, is that right?
That's right, Las Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, a home race. You must be excited for that.
About a 3-hour car drive from home, so I'm really excited.
Fantastic. I hope you enjoy it. Good luck for whatever's next as well into next season. Really enjoyed talking to you on F1 Explains. Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you for having me.
Esteban Ocon, Ollie Bearman, welcome. We've got you for just a few minutes, so these are going to have to be real quick-fire questions, right, Esteban?
Yeah, because we're about to get in the car for racing.
That's more important.
And Ollie's still full of bolognese in his mouth.
Well, such quick-fire that Ollie's literally eating his lunch. You okay?
Very good.
Yeah. Okay, great. First question is from Courtney, who we've just heard from. Courtney says...
Is that Courtney, F1 Academy driver?
It is.
Oh, really?
That is the very same Courtney. Courtney says, when you're both on separate setups, how do you figure out which one's better? What kind of info are you giving up when you're trying to correlate different setups, sort of between you, if you're both trying different things?
Esteban?
Ollie Haster, Esteban, answer question.
The one that is quicker usually is the better one, you know?
That makes sense, doesn't it?
So, yeah.
Is there an element of working together on it? Will the two of you chat together about it?
Yeah, definitely, we do. Yeah. We do, because, you know, it's very important for us to try and understand, you know, how it's best to use the car. And... you know, if you have two chances of trying different things, in the end of the day, you know, the team is moving further up. So, yeah, definitely.
All right, next one. This is from Catherine in Pennsylvania. Over to you, Catherine.
Hi, Christian. I have a quick question for Esteban. What's it like being a teammate with a rookie? And how does that compare to being a teammate with a more established driver? Love the podcast. Thanks.
No, I mean, it's great to be working with Ollie. You know, obviously, you know, he's a rookie. There are a lot of things that, you know, he's discovering, but Ollie has been, you know, fully up to speed straight away. Great to work with, fun character outside the track. We share a lot of similar passion for cars as well, which is, you know, awesome. And yeah, I mean, it's been fun to work with him.
Do you have to say nice things about him because he sat next to you?
No.
Okay, great.
If he wasn't. I would tell him.
Okay, good. We'll beat that out. Ollie Bearman, what's it been like having an experience, but not too experienced? Still plenty.
I got told I was senior yesterday, so I told everyone.
Nice, yeah, I know. What's it like now, having the young yet experienced?
Thank you.
There you go. Esteban Ocon as your teammate.
Yeah, Esteban has both. He's young and experienced, so it's perfect. No, it's great. You know, to have someone that experienced at this stage of my career. Of course, the thing that I lack is experience as an F1 driver in my first season, and that's what Esteban makes up. And especially at the start of the season when I was trying to talk about the setup of the car and what I was feeling on what the car was doing, I was learning a lot from Esteban about how he's describing the car and how to put it into words for the engineers. And of course, he's very quick, which is great to have as a teammate.
And Esteban, I guess, as well, from your perspective, like, with the greatest of respect to where Haas is with a project, it's not like fighting for a title. So you guys can work together to bring the car further up the pack, I'm guessing, right?
I think we would be working together as well if we were to fight for the title. I mean, it's so close nowadays. in F1 throughout the field that, you know, one tends to make a huge difference. So, yes, unfortunately, we are not fighting for the title, but, you know, we never know where we will be next year. If we can get closer to the top five and more points frequently, you know, that would be ideal. So we'll see where that leads us. But for sure, we are working very hard towards, you know, using the best out of this car and preparing ourselves for next year also.
Ollie Manha asks, how different does the car feel from the simulator to real life track conditions?
Yeah, the simulator is an important tool for us, you know, to prepare. You know, from my side, the two tracks that we've just been at are brand new for me. So the simulator is the only way that we can prepare ourselves for the track. Of course, you miss out on the G-force and the feeling of what the car is doing underneath you in the simulator. But you can still get your references, braking points, how to drive as a you know, top level stuff. So it's better than nothing, but I would always take, you know, one day of testing before I would take 10 days of simulator. Driving the real car is much more
important.
That's
a nice way of putting it. This next one comes from Charles, who lives near Marseille in France.
I know that guy. He's just over there in the Ferrari.
That's not that one. Not that one.
He doesn't live in Marseille.
A well-spotted Esteban. And it is about being French in this case, Esteban. Can drivers choose the language of their team radios? I.e., Esteban, could he have a team radio in French?
I don't think many people will understand him in this team.
That would be great. Yeah, no. I mean, Sasha is... and Laura, she speaks a little bit of French also.
Does Laura speak French?
Yeah, she does a little bit.
So
I mean,
option.
She understands a little bit.
Okay, fine.
And Aya always comes to me and say, la patate, which means, you know, do you have good energy today? You know, it's like la patate, it's like potato. But whatever. It's like if you have good energy.
I'm not quite following the link, but
yeah,
fine.
No,
yeah, sure.
No. It's what we say in France.
But to answer the question, you guys have to speak in English over the team radio, right?
It has to be.
Because English is the sort of... I mean, it's the sort of chosen language of F1, doesn't it? Very, very quickly, guys, we're speaking to you just before a race. So when you're in this position, what's going through your head? You're about to go from here, literally, to go to the garage, get changed.
Get water now, because we have to run to the parade. That's the first thing that comes to mind. I haven't finished my lunch. Thanks,
mate.
I'm sorry.
No, should have brought it down to the
podcast.
Multitasking.
Well, you haven't finished yours either.
No, it's okay. They give me a big portion.
Ollie, things that are going through your head just before a race?
Trying to digest my food now as quickly as possible. And thinking about how good that pasta was. Looking forward to the race. Of course, we go over all of the strategy and our expectations for the race, and then we see how it really turns out, because we can only predict so much, you know. So we're always playing out as many scenarios as possible, but when it comes to it, it's we're out there alone, you know.
We massively appreciate both of you, and we're really sorry for interrupting your lunch. Go
all
well
good.
Today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
guys.
A lot.
Thank
much
you.
Appreciated.
Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman there. And I said this to Aya right at the start of the show, but Haas have been absolutely brilliant with us this season. They've really opened their doors to us and helped us to explain the world of Formula One. I know you all appreciate it, particularly as we've mentioned in this episode, we've got so many listeners in the United States. So Haas, thank you so much to you guys. Thank you to Esteban and Ollie, who are just two genuinely very nice people who are always really good to chat to. They always aren't afraid to open up about their thoughts and feelings about racing and about wider life in Formula One. I mentioned Ollie Bearman was filming us at one point for his vlog. I'm not sure whether we made it. I'm not sure whether that episode's out yet. I need to check. If you see F1 Explains recording on Ollie Bearman's blog or vlog, whatever it is, please let us know. F1explains@f1.com. I'll be very interested in that. And I don't know if you picked up, but so last week I mentioned at the start of the show, we did an episode all about data. There was loads of interest in that because we spoke to Tom Stallard, Oscar Piastri's race engineer. And Tom said, look, yeah, even though the boys are fighting for a title, they still share data with each other. That's cropped up again in this episode where I said, look, there's no need to be secretive. You're not fighting for a title. And notice how Esteban said, yeah, but even if we were, we'd still work with each other, we'd still share that data. And a lot of people found that insight really, really interesting. I mentioned last week there was a time in Formula One when Pablo Montoya told us recently in a little show I watched with him, that didn't used to happen. Him and Ralph Schumacher back in the Williams days in the 2000s were ultra secretive, barely spoke to each other. It's such a sign and way that Formula One has moved on, that Esteban's saying, look, even if we were fighting for the title, we'd still be sharing data, we'd still be looking at helping each other. So in Tom Stallard's words, we can beat the best version of the driver in the garage next to us. It's really interesting. As I said, that episode went down really, really well. Jolyon Palmer and Tom Stallard explaining what data teams look at, why it's important, who looks at it. It's fascinating. That is on this feed if you'd like to have a look. We have new episodes here on F1 Explained every Friday. F1, of course, you know, has two other official podcasts. It's a very good time to be checking those out, not least with F1 Nation, because boy, have we got a title fight to talk about. One point in it. One actual, literal point between Lando Norris, who now leads the championship, and Oscar Piastri, with Max Verstappen still dangerously lurking, loitering in the distance. So Tom Clarkson and his esteemed guests will preview and debrief what could be an unbelievably exciting Brazilian Grand Prix. Do check that out. And this is fun. On Tom's other pod, F1 Beyond the Grid, where they sit down and talk to people about their life and times in Formula One, there is not only team principal of McLaren, Andrea Stella, but the CEO, Zak Brown, together. I hope they play Mr. and Mrs. with them. Are you aware of this? Where, I don't know if this is just a British game show, but it's like you'd ask, typically a married couple, but you know, it doesn't have to be, who's most likely to, I don't know, leave the toilet seat up, and they'd hold up a paddle for like each other to say who's most likely. Did you have that in the United States? Is that just a British thing? Did you have that around the world? Let me know. F1 Explains at F1.com. I hope Tom did that with them. And it's probably a sign as to why I'm not presenting that show and Tom is, because he's a professional. But still, it'll be very interesting to hear them talk about their lives and times in Formula One together. That is F1 Beyond the Grid with Tom. Do check that out. We are back with another episode next week, where two of my absolute favourites are answering your questions. We did this all the way back at the start of the season, but we have reunited Laura Winter and James Hinchcliffe. We've put them back together to answer your questions. Spoiler alert for next week's episode, comfortably the most chaotic recording we've done of the year. I think possibly the funniest as well. So F1 TV's Hinch and Laura are there. And then we will be back on the ground in Las Vegas explaining more things Formula One. Speaking of Vegas and speaking of the USA, we're going to be getting the lowdown on all things Cadillac. I won't say who we're talking to, but it's cool. So we're talking Cadillac before the end of the season here on F1 Explains as well. Hit subscribe, hit like, hit follow, and you won't miss a thing when we release our new episodes every Friday. Have a fantastic week. Enjoy the Grand Prix this weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Until then, bye for now.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.